Good morning, church. It is good to see y'all on this Sunday morning. Russ said it's a beautiful day, and it really and truly is. We've really had a week of beautiful weather, and today sort of reflects the mood, I think, for our congregation that we are heading towards summer. It's getting warmer and sunnier days, and just the opportunity to be together. Just you don't take that for granted nearly as much, at least I don't, and nearly as much as I used to. So thankful for your presence, you who are able to be with us or who are in the auditorium watching us through the stream, or those of you who are still at home watching the stream. Thankful for your joining us as well. Well, this morning we're going to be talking about the nitty-gritty of human life, the dirt. The dish, so I don't know what you kids say. Anyway, whatever you want to call it, the bad stuff, right? What better place? And I was trying to think, what's a good example of this? And I couldn't think of any better example than the soap opera. I would say the modern soap opera, but really they're kind of fading away. For those of you who are my age or older, and we remember a time when soap operas dominated daytime television. I mean, there were lots of different stories to choose from, and they had captivating storylines like this. This is just a recap from one episode, the G version. On the train to France, Stephanie surprised Max. He asked why she was there. She explained that she wanted to be with him and that her father was okay with everything. He still protested. If you won't let me help you, what kind of relationship do we have? She asked. She went to leave, but he asked her to stay. They kissed. Or, you know, a little later, same episode, at the Brady Pub, Ava, and by the way, if you know what soap opera this is, keep your mouth shut. Do not confess to that this morning. This is not the sermon for that. But at the Brady Pub, Ava asked Nicole about EJ. She told her about the elevator escapade and how she pushed him away. Nicole then revealed her secret past with Trent Robbins. In a private booth, Marlena met with a disguised Rolf, and Marlena showed Rolf the broken disc and told him he needed to put it back together for her. She promised she'd give him immunity for anything he'd done wrong, but he said he didn't trust her. And then Judge Fitzpatrick arrived at the Demira Mansion to meet with EJ, and John came in during their meeting, but John didn't recognize her. EJ remarked that John still didn't trust him, and John said he didn't trust anybody. And then he noted that he did some research on himself, and he knows that EJ stole his kidney for Stefano. True story. EJ apologized and said, "That should show how loyal I am." That is a real soap opera, folks. And when Jesus is going through his Sermon on the Mount, he deals with some moral evil and goodness. Jesus is not theorizing. He dives immediately into the guts of human existence. You get raging anger and contempt and hatred, obsessive lust and divorce and verbal manipulation and revenge and slapping and cursing and suing and coercing and begging. It is like a soap opera of stuff that when you read through this, you're like, what is wrong with those people? And then you remember, oh yes, that's my life too, right? Jesus is not just talking about being good. Jesus is talking about empowering people to actually be good. Jesus knows how to do that, how to be that, and he brings his knowledge to your everyday life and to my everyday life. Most of the time, I think most of us would say, I want to be good. I want to do the right thing and say the right thing and think the right way, but we just can't find our way. No, I don't think most of the time we want to do evil, but sometimes we just find it necessary to do evil. A little girl was in a Sunday school class, and she was asked what a lie was. And she quoted the Bible. She said, a lie is an abomination to God and a very present help in time of trouble. Jesus knows this about us. this back and forth we have going on inside of us between wanting to do what is right and what is good and wanting to do what we think will benefit us most. That's the war that's going on inside of us. So a lot of this portion of the Sermon on the Mount for the next several verses is going to be just kind of hitting a square between the eyes. So before we get into this part, I want to begin with a word of warning. We have to remember that this is a one talk, it is one sermon, and it's got a continuous theme. We're taking it apart because we can only go through so much at a time and talk about it. And when you do that, it is really tempting to think, okay, this section, this is the law about this. And this section, this is the law about that. And then you get these laws that are dictating what you are and aren't supposed to do. And it's like a new law is being issued by Jesus. And then these laws get sort of twisted and they mandate impossibilities. In some cases, they even sound ridiculous, like the example of cutting off your hand or punching out your eyes. I mean, if you take it as a law, that's the law, right? I don't think that's supposed to be taken literally. I don't know anyone who thinks it's supposed to be taken literally, but if we're going to take them as laws, that's the literal law. But Jesus, I don't think, is issuing laws. I think he's dealing with the sources of the wrongdoing. He's not focusing on the actions themselves. He's not making an ultimate law. That's not what the role of his sermon was to say, forget all that old stuff that Moses talked about. Here's the real law. Wrong action was not the problem. Wrong action was the symptom of the problem that we have going on inside of us. And so he says in Matthew 5, verse 24, I tell you, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter into the kingdom of heaven. We have to go beyond the righteousness of the Pharisees and the scribes. We have to go beyond just doing the right thing. At the same time, we have to actually do the right thing. We have to actually do what Jesus says to do. That too was also beyond the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, because they were really good about talking about it and knowing technically what was right, but without actually doing what was right. So we have to get to the source of the problem so that we can actually deal with our actions. And so the question Jesus is grappling with underneath all of this section here in the Sermon on the Mount, and really, I would argue, going back into the Beatitudes, what he's really getting at is, how can anyone keep the law? That's the big question. How can you actually do what is right? And Jesus knows, and I'll bet you know too, from firsthand experience, that you don't do right just by trying really hard to do right. Has anybody ever tried that? Just like, okay, this week, I'm not going to get mad, right? Now I am not going to lust, or now I'm not going to be greedy, or now I'm not going to be selfish, or whatever it is you struggle with. And it's just the trying really hard, no matter how determined we are on that front, it always ends up falling short. To actually succeed at it, we have to aim at something else, something different, something bigger, something more. We have to aim at becoming the kind of person from whom doing the right thing is just a natural course of action. So if I were to tell you this morning, I'd like for you to make me an apple. Not an apple pie, not an apple turnover. I want you to make an apple. I don't think any of you are capable of that. If you do, you are awesome, because I love apples. But if you could make an apple, you would not be a person, right? You would be an apple tree. And an apple tree can make an apple just as easy as can be. For an apple tree, making apples comes naturally and easily, because that's what it's designed to do. And so making the scribes, the mistake of the scribes and the Pharisees was like, we've got to make some apples. We're going to make good deeds, right? And they were just focusing on the laws that these actions required, and they were making like elaborate specifications about this is exactly how you got to do this, and this is exactly how you got to do that. And to be honest, we've been a little guilty of that at some points in our own past, probably personally, but certainly speaking for Christianity, we've really gotten wrapped up at that in different points, and in churches of Christ specifically, we've really gotten tied up in that before. And when you find out is that creates this really specific sort of social pressure to conform. Like you just got to do these certain things and you'll fit in, right? But the inner parts, the heart and the character, those can go hidden and unchecked as long as you're doing the right things. And it can still remain contrary to what God has required. It is not our outward actions that need correction. That's not what we're dealing with here. It is our inner selves that need transformation. Because once that happens, then the right actions, the following of the law, the keeping the law, that's what it begins to flow naturally once we've been transformed on the inside. So that's the word of warning that Jesus gives up front, and we're trying to bear in mind as we go through these. So in Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 48, Jesus describes what it's like to be a really good person, a truly good person, not just appearing to be good to your parents or to your friends or to your church group, but really and truly actually being a good person. And Jesus terms it righteousness. This is how you practice righteousness. This is how you obtain righteousness. And he compares and contrasts the way they've thought about having righteousness and what the new way, or kingdom righteousness, we might say, what that looks like. And the first illustration he uses of kingdom righteousness, it's drawn from an instance when we get really upset or angry or just displeased with someone, and we allow ourselves to get caught up in that emotion. So beginning in verse 20, Jesus says, or verse 21, Jesus says, "You have heard it said to the people long ago, do not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. And anyone who says to his brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says to you, you fool, or says you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell." So Jesus presents the elimination of anger and malice and contempt. This is the first step towards having a kingdom righteousness kind of heart. If you actually want to be the good person Jesus is describing, you got to dig in there and find this stuff. Yes, it is very important that we not kill people. Do not think I am saying that is unimportant. Do not go kill people. That's a big one. But is killing, not killing people all that we owe them? Look, I'm pretty good to you. I don't kill you. I mean, is that all we owe to our fellow man? Not killing them? Think for just a moment about some of your most shameful, or we might say cringeworthy, moments in your life. How many of you, when you think about those, can come up with a moment of unchecked anger? Just raise your hand. If some of your worst moments were fits of anger or rage, it is really easy to get there. Even for people you think of as even-tempered and calm and godly people, it is really easy for our anger to get around unchecked. Most of us probably this morning are not carrying around the guilt of murder. That's just, we're thankful for that. But on the flip side, most of us can easily come up with those terrible episodes from our own life where we've lashed out in anger and where we have said or done things that have brought great harm, often to the people we love the most, and become some of our most shameful past, right? But it's more than that. That's a good start, but it is more than that. Anger is an injury to the other person, even if you don't do anything. Even if you don't actually act out your anger, it is still a damage to the other person. So suppose you find out this morning, you leave and you go home, and one of your friends calls and says, "Hey, I hate to tell you this, but Dustin is furious with you." What would you think? Would you be hurt? I would hope so, right? If I go home and I find out you're furious with me, I don't sleep well. I don't feel well. I get restless. I get nervous. My feelings are hurt. And sometimes it does more than that. Your anger may make me angry at you. I'm mad at you for being mad at me. Your anger feeds my anger. Even when you haven't done anything, your being mad at me makes me mad at you. It raises the stress level of everybody in the room and everyone else in the process. And then somebody feels like, well, I got to get in there and sort this thing out between them because I don't want them to be mad. And they're all caught up in it. And you got our family members, our loved ones who are concerned about us and the whole situation. So anger, even if you don't do anything with it, still causes damage. But up to this point, it's not technically a sin. It's just causing damage. It's damage best avoided, but it's, according to, Jesus hadn't said anything about it being sin. The problem is that our anger doesn't stay there. It usually goes beyond that and turns into something that Jesus does call evil. Our anger becomes malice. And malice, there is a degree of malice contained in all of anger. We want to get even, or even to harm those who have interfered with us or hurt us. That's why it always hurts when someone's mad at you. Even if you don't know why, even if you think they're wrong, it always hurts when people are mad at us because we know that they want to hurt us. They may not want to physically harm us, but they want ill for us. They want a degree of suffering for us. So by giving us the evil eye or refusing, passive-aggressive, I'm just not going to look at them. Nope, I don't see them, right? That little passive-aggressive move right there, raising a voice in anger, refusing to speak to someone when they speak to you, that's a way that you can achieve a goal of hurting the other person without doing physical harm. And that is, brothers and sisters, that's not just anger, that's malice. That's trying to hurt the other person. And yet Jesus says an even greater condemnation for another consequence of anger: contempt. Now, unlike just regular old anger, contempt is never justifiable. It is never good. We see Jesus on occasion get angry. Justifiably, he gets angry, but even Jesus gets angry. You can get angry and not sin, but you cannot have contempt without sin. Now, the Aramaic term that Jesus used, raka, that was used to mark someone as contemptible. If I'm angry at you, I want to hurt you. If I call you raka, I don't care what happens to you. I don't care if you're hurt or you're not hurt. You aren't worth my consideration one way or the other. It is zero care for the other person. And we can be angry at someone without denying their worth, right? I've gotten mad at my wife, my kids, they've gotten mad at me. And you can get mad at someone and still love them. If you're calling someone raka and you're thinking of someone with contempt, it devalues their worth. It makes it easier for them to hurt them because we see them as not really that important. We might use the word term dimwit or idiot or worthless or stupid, or I don't know what words you might use, but we use words like that, and the intent and the effect of this contempt is to push someone out. It is to exclude them. It is to say to leave them out there, out of our group, and to leave them isolated. That's what you're trying to do. If you're calling someone those names, they are not a part of you. How often do we see it on the schoolyard? Maybe you remember this from your school days, or you're still in school. Or we see it at a party or in the workplace, sometimes in the home, and not infrequently in the church. Someone being pushed down, put down, omitted, or left out. In high society, contempt is a fine art, right? You're supposed to look down on people. It is also true of racism. It is also true of partisan politics. It is sadly even true of some religious groups. Practicing contempt is part of being a member in good standing. If you don't hate the other group, you don't fit in with our group. Does that make sense? You with me, church? It is important in these sorts of groups, it is important that you point out the flaws of those people over there, that other group, so that no one will accidentally link you with them. They have to be the others. I am not a part of them. This is what is wrong with them. Those others are beneath us. They are less than us. They are subhuman. So we see it all the time. If you follow a left-wing or right-wing media news source, you see it all the time about the people who oppose you politically. If you are part of, have seen any of the racially charged literature that is out there, you know, that's just, you got to do it, right? If you're going to fit in with this group, you have to think bad and talk bad about that group. And so that's what Jesus is targeting here. Not just being angry and doing things bad to people, but dismissing them as being less. And we have other terms we might use for people like that, that we shouldn't share in polite company. But in Jesus' sermon, to brand someone as a fool, to call someone a fool, in the biblical sense, was a violation of the soul so devastating, it caused such great harm, that Jesus said it would justify consigning the offender to a smoldering heap of garbage, Gehenna, the constantly burning garbage pit outside of Jerusalem. If you talk about people that way, the harm you do, the harm you cause, deserves this sort of judgment, Jesus said. So we've got a progression here. Have you noticed the progression? Jesus first is like, you know, in your anger, don't act this way, and then don't treat people with malice, and then don't treat people with contempt. Or don't murder, don't get angry, don't treat people with contempt. It's gotten progressively more specific. It's a threefold progression of the preciousness of human beings, that every person is of value. That's what's the base value behind all of this. Is that you don't get to treat anybody like this. Jesus is revealing the value of you and me as people bearing the image of God, of every person bearing the image of God. These are not three more laws that, now I've really messed up because I've got three more things to do wrong. And if that was the case, if it was just three more laws, then what we would do as human beings is we would just follow the ways of the scribes and the Pharisees and find three ways to technically keep the laws without ever changing the inside. I don't get mad. I get even. Jesus is not working on the law level. Jesus is working on the source of those actions. teaching us the kind of love that God has for us and the kind of love that brings us into harmony with God's life. No one can be right with God if you think about other people as being less than you. You can't. I don't care how different from you they are. I don't care how wrong they are. Their lifestyle may be completely contrary to the life that is offered in God's word. It may be completely antithetical to Jesus' sacrifice and resurrection. What they say and what they do may be wrong on every level, on every front. It can be terrible. It can be dehumanizing behavior. But you don't get to think of them as contemptible. You can think about some of the things they do or say. That is wrong. But we don't get to treat anyone with contempt or hatred. We cannot be right in the kingdom of God if we think of anyone as being less than. So if I'm planning on going to New York, and I'm not because I'm not glutton for punishment, but if I were deciding I'm just going to head up to New York, I don't have to plan that trip thinking, okay, don't go to London, don't go to London, don't go to London, right? I don't have to figure that into my planning. I just take steps to go to New York so that I get to New York. I don't have to plan around not going to London. And if you are going to be the kind of person Jesus is describing, you don't need to walk around all the time like going, okay, don't murder, okay, don't murder, okay, don't murder. Instead, I'm just going to take steps to be the sort of person Jesus describes. When I treasure the people around me, when I see everyone as God's image, designed for His purposes, I don't have to make additional points to not hate them or not call them ugly names. I don't have to take additional steps to not dismiss them or treat them with contempt. Not doing those things is just part of the package. And brothers and sisters, I was thinking like this morning, and as I was kind of going through this sermon, it was really convicting for me because I'm not by nature a super angry guy. Some of you, I know some people really struggle with that, and I'm normally pretty laid back. But as I was thinking about like my own life, oh man, I wished I had heard this sermon before I said that or before I did this. I wished I'd had this in my heart when I experienced this moment of frustration, when I'd gone through this struggle. Brothers and sisters, that's one of the great things about being able to be together as church, is we want to encourage one another, not be perfect like I'm perfect, but don't make the same mistakes I've made. That is what I desire more than anything for my kids. They're going to make mistakes, right? But I don't want to make the same mistakes I made. And as Christians this morning, we want to encourage one another to not make those same mistakes in anger and in malice and in contempt that we ourselves have made in the past. Let us encourage one another to walk on in truth, to walk on in love. That's why Jesus says this is so important, that if you're at odds with your brother or sister, don't even go make your sacrifice. You go fix that first. We are about mending not just the fences between one another, but the fences that are going on in our hearts. May God bless you in the study of His word this morning. And if you have any need this morning that you want to lift up, if you've struggled with your anger, with your temper, or with your actions that have flowed out of that, if you have struggled thinking of everyone, even those really different than you, or those who are really wrong, or however you want to think of, if you have struggled thinking of them as people made in the image of God, and you want forgiveness, or you want prayers for strength or for encouragement, we want to do that for you this morning. If, in fact, there's anything we can do for you, won't you come now as we stand and as we sing.